This is going to be fascinating, and it's been far too long since I've had the chance to talk to David Icke. I was thinking today, I don't remember when, but it was the early 90s, somehow, somewhere that I met David in Santa Barbara. He was staying at a friend of ours, a home, and I was invited over, and he was actually putting on a presentation in Santa Barbara that night, and I was asked if I would introduce him, and I did, and we've been, I guess, comrades, so to speak, in this battle for a long time. David, hello. How the hell are you?
Hello, Jeff. I've never been better, mate. It's really good what's happening.
Yeah. This is what we're seeing now. So many things that you talked about back then have come to pass. You really haven't missed.
Well, I mean, predicting the future is very easy unless something intervenes in the projected plan for the world, if you like. I mean,
sure.
When you look at people like Aldous Huxley, George Orwell, and others I quoted in my books, they have proved to be so accurate in what were apparently novels but weren't really,
right?
Because there is a long-term projected plan for the world, and if nothing intervenes in that plan and you can uncover it, then you can quite comfortably predict the future, sometimes in great detail. The idea, of course, the point of what you do, the point of what I do, is to reach a point of public awareness and therefore public response where you don't predict the future anymore because there is an intervention to stop it happening. And,
exactly.
You know, I'm really encouraged. I've just come back from Australia. I went on a 6-week speaking tour there.
Yeah.
And other indications that I'm getting all the time. I mean, you know, when you keep being stopped in the street, not only in your own country, but 13,000 miles away, by people who want to talk about the information, and then you look back to the early 1990s when you couldn't fill a phone box, you know that we are making progress. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we can discuss if the progress is enough yet. And of course, it's not. But we are entering a different world in terms of public perception.
It's a hell of a lot better than a poke in the eye, as they say. We've got, we have people, and you have done so much to almost one-on-one with your live presentations, all of your speeches, to reach out and connect with people. Nothing like a live audience. And you move people. You change their lives with the information. It's not you. You're not in this for you. It's the information. It always has been. And they get it. And this, I don't know how big that percentage is. I don't know that it really matters all that much right now. The fact is that it exists, and you have played a key role in creating it, allowing these people to reach out and synthesize data they would otherwise never be able to approach. They just can't do it.
Well, what I'm also, Jeff, greatly encouraged by is not just the numbers of people now that are able to break out of what I call the postage stamp consensus or the postage stamp normal or perception of normal. It's not just the numbers who are doing that. It's the kind of people who are doing that. I mean, the people who were in the system, some still are in the system because they have to earn a living. And people whose mentality not long ago would have dismissed and dismiss this information and way of looking at the world. But now that suddenly makes sense to them, there is something happening. And I'll tell you a quick story. You know, when I started blinking into this whole thing in 1990, when I had various experiences, 1990-91, where the top of my head blew off and stuff. I, in early 1990, or through 1989, fully enough, had this feeling that I was in the BBC at the time and a national spokesman for the British Green Party. And I had this feeling that whenever I was alone, that I wasn't alone. And it got more and more and more powerful through 1989 into early 1990. And long story, I'll cut it very short. I ended up going to a psychic to see if she would pick up what the heck I was feeling around me. I didn't tell her anything that was going on. Mm-hmm. And what I was told at that time was I was going to go out on a world stage and reveal great secrets. But where I'm going with this is that in those early days, the synchronicity of my life, I was bumping into a lot of psychic people in those early months, and there was a common theme that I was being told. And that was that there was a vibrational change coming, what I would call an energetic frequency information change now, that was going to act like a spiritual alarm clock. And it was going to touch the people who were more awake and less asleep first. But eventually, even those that were seriously at that time asleep to the greater reality were going to be affected by it. Now,
So the dichotomy will mitigate over time. There is a schism here now. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I gave the name to this vibrational change, the truth vibrations, because one of the other common themes about this vibrational change that I was told was not just coming but had already started, was that it was going to bring to the surface all that had been hidden from people. And of course, you look at 1990 and you look about how many people were open to this information. You look at 1990 and look how much of that we know now that we didn't know then.
Right.
And there was no evidence at that time that this was happening. But when I look at it now, and especially just coming back from Australia, which was amazing, there is a tremendous awakening going on. I mean, I'm talking in Romania in November, and I've never been to Romania. There's going to be 4,000 people there listening to a simultaneously translated presentation for 10 hours.
Wow.
There is something happening, so it's very encouraging, despite the things that are not pleasant that are going on.
Right. Well, that's you pull more people than Hillary Clinton is pulling.
Well, that wouldn't be difficult, would it?
No. She had 150 at a gymnasium 2 weeks ago or something. God.
Crikey.
It is.
In the phone box where I was in 1990, Sid.
Yeah, when I remember sitting and talking to you that day, and we had a conversation, and this was not long after, as you just said, the top of your head blew off, BBC and all that. It was a couple of years after, I guess. And I remember you were so intense with it. It was like some light had flooded into you. I mean, you were just really focused. And we had a pretty good crowd when you did speak in Santa Barbara. We had 300 people, I think. And that was pre-internet, pretty much. A lot of photocopying and passing out of stuff and telephone calling and interesting times.
I remember those early days. I mean, the audience in Santa Barbara was like a stadium compared with what I was talking to at that time. Usually,
yeah.
I mean, I talked to 8 people in Chicago once. And I recall, it's interesting when you kind of look back and you look at, the communications that we use now, how it actually was so different then. You had to use paper and pass it around as word of mouth.
That's what we were doing, yeah.
When I was in Australia this time, flying from place to place, staying in hotels to on the trip, it reminded me of the first time I went to Australia in the 1990s to speak, and I was driven around Australia in the I was sitting in the back of a tiny car, going from place to place, talking to very, very few people, and then a vast journey the next day to talk to some more. And in so many ways, we have moved on massively from where it started, and I'm very encouraged by what's going on.
Yeah. When you say that the top of your head blew off, that's a very interesting mental image, and it was replaced. It didn't vanish. It was replaced with you were like somebody with a beam of light running right up his spine into his head. And I don't know how you dealt with that at the BBC. What was it that triggered that head blow off image that you've just put in our minds? What was it back then that really was it like one day you got him and said, good grief?
Well, it's quite an extraordinary story, really. And if you put it in a movie, they'd say, "Come on, that's far fetched. That would never happen." Well, it did. After I'd seen this psychic in March of 1990 and was told I was going to go out on a world stage and reveal great secrets, my life suddenly changed. At the time, I was a national presenter for the BBC, national spokesman for the Green Party.
Yeah.
Within 3 months, the BBC had not renewed my contract when it ran out, so I'd left the BBC, and I'd left the Green Party, and my life became this synchronistic journey of walking into people, information, personal experience, books that were handing me puzzle pieces. And at the early days, of course, it was bewildering. What's all this about? But then, layer upon layer, and it started to become clearer and clearer and clearer. But anyway, by the end of 1990, I'd written a book called Truth Vibrations about what was happening to me. Uh-huh. Not that I completely understood it by any means. And at the end of 1990, when the book went off to the printers, I started getting this overwhelming feeling that I needed to go to Peru. I mean, I'm sitting in England. What do I go to Peru for? But I was seeing Peru everywhere. I'd walk down the street and there'd be, you know, something in the, you know, a shop window about Peru, and then I'd turn the television on and there's something about Peru. It was everywhere.
No coincidences.
Yeah, and so purely on intuition, I headed for Peru and not knowing why I was going. Anyway, long story short, I ended up on a hill near a place called Siustani, which is near Puno on Lake Titicaca in Peru. Uh-huh. And I walked to this kind of, it was like a circle of stones, and there's a long story leading up to it. And I walked up and stood in among these stones, and suddenly I felt like a drill going in the top of my head. I now know it was energy, and then down through my feet into the ground, and another flow coming the other way. And then my arms went out at 45 degrees, and I never had made any conscious decision to do it. And then it wasn't a voice, it was a very strong thought form, which said, it will be over when you feel the rain. And I'm standing on this hill under a cloudless Peruvian blue sky and piercing sun, and I'm hearing this, it will be over when you feel the rain. And you think, this is just crazy. Anyway, this energy got more and more and more powerful, to the point where I'm my body's literally shaking, like I'm plugged into the socket. And it went on for about 45 minutes.
You're alone there, David?
Yeah, I was alone. Mm-hmm. And then eventually the guide guy who was down in the bus came up right at the end, because he wanted to know where I was. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of that time I was alone. And what happened is I kept going in and out of conscious awareness. For instance, you know, like when you're driving a car and you can't remember the last 2 miles, that kind of thing. But then I would come back to conscious awareness while all this is going on. And I'm shaking all the time, and my arms are at 45 degrees all the time, and I didn't feel anything. When it was over, my shoulders were agony, but not while it was going on. And then at one of the points where came back to some conscious awareness, I noticed that over the distant mountains there was a light gray mist. And I very, very quickly it got darker and darker, and it was seriously raining over those mountains. And then over this period of 45 minutes to an hour, this enormous rainstorm came out of these mountains towards me. And as it came across, people talk about weather fronts. It was literally a straight line. I described it like pulling curtains across the land, you know, or across the sky. And it was coming towards me, stair rod rain. And by this time, I can hardly stand with this energy. And then eventually this rain hit me. I mean, so fiercely, I was soaked instantly. And then the energy stopped. And My hands had energy pouring out of them for about 24 hours. My feet too. I couldn't sleep that night because of it. And then my life changed in the sense that I came back to England, and for 3 months, if you'd have asked me what planet it was on, I couldn't have told you. And it was like pressing too many keys on a computer too quickly, and the computer goes, oh, sorry, can't process this, I'm freezing. Because what was happening after that, Jeff, was that concepts, perceptions, information, insights were pouring into my conscious mind. And you couldn't process them. And for 3 months, I didn't know where I was. But then after about 3 months, by which time I'm getting mass ridicule in Britain, the computer unfroze. And people were saying, I thought you'd gone mad. The media said you'd gone mad. You seem like the old David. What's happened? And I did seem like the old David. I acted the same. And I interacted with people the same, but I wasn't the old David. I could see things now that I couldn't see before. I could see dots, how dots connected, and I could see what was being said, even though the words weren't saying it in terms of what politicians were saying and people like that. My perceptions changed dramatically, and the journey began. And not long after that, I came across you, of course, in Santa Barbara. That's how I got there.
You really took a beating in the beginning from your colleagues and peers and the corrupt media. It wasn't going to give you a chance at all. They just nailed you. And I watched that. I remember that. I've seen accounts of it, and it was really ugly. But I guess the inner strength that you had, cosmic wisdom, whatever. That, like I say, it was like you were light. You were almost a light being when we talked and had that day together, and then that evening, and it was clear that something unusual had happened to you. Now, you never really thought about this stuff before the top of your head blew off.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I've always been a rebel. I've been a rebel since I was a kid. I've always questioned authority since I was a kid. I mean, authority had to command respect by its action, not demand it just because it was authority. I've always been like that. But that period of what it was, historic levels of ridicule and abuse in the media, was fantastic for me, because, you know, life is like, life to the conscious mind is like canoeing down a river. The conscious mind can only see the next turn, but deeper levels of ourselves can see the whole river from source to sea. So what appears to be a disaster to the conscious mind is actually a wonderful gift to the expanded awareness. I've said many times, life so often gives us our greatest gifts, brilliantly disguised as our worst nightmares. And what that did for me was clear me of the prison that most people live in, which is the fear of what other people think. You know, when you're under that historic level of constant ridicule, when you can't walk down any street without being laughed at, when you can't go in a bar because there's uproar of ridicule, when you stand in front of an audience of students and you can't speak for like 5 minutes because of the noise and the ridicule and the stuff,
you were a free man, a free soul, a free spirit, and they sense that. And they didn't like that. It scared them. It made them feel very ill at ease. Who is this guy? And that's why I think you were pounded and abused so badly. You were free.
Well, I think because we live in such an inverted world, because of the way it's systematically constructed, people are frightened of freedom. They're frightened of spontaneity. Yeah. They're frightened of people who are different. It's always been the same throughout known human history.
Yep.
Because it's one of the things I talk about on the world tour. It's when you look at why people have such a myopic view of everything, you then look at the process of what we call life. You come out of the womb, and immediately your perceptions are influenced by your parents who've been through the system you're about to go through. You then, in a ludicrously short time after coming into this world, you're sitting at a desk with an authority figure telling you what is, what isn't, when you have to be there, when
Absolutely.
You can leave, when you can eat. And this goes on all the way through your formative years, where you are given the state's version of reality. This is the point. It's about what is, what isn't, what's possible, what's not possible. And then after you've gone out of the programming system called education, you then go into the institutions, you go into journalism or politics or science or medicine, whatever, and you take with you that core programming, that core download of the perception of normal, what I call the postage stamp normal, the postage stamp consensus. Mm-hmm. And this then defends itself from all borders, because you first of all have peer pressure to conform, because your peers have been through the same download and accepted it. And anyone who questions the download version of normal is not normal. And what is normal? Normal is just what we normally experience. That's what is all it is, and what we normally believe. And so you then have the mainstream media and much of the alternative media, I have to say, that also supports the normal in many, many ways.
Correct.
All this information that you're receiving throughout your life is downloading that normal, a version of normal, and then constantly confirming that download is right, that download is how things are. And so when people come along and they, people like me are not just challenging 9/11, we're challenging absolutely every perception and assumption right down to the fundamentals of what reality is. When someone's doing that, well, they're either mad or bad, because you can't handle it, because it's so far off your normal. And therefore, they've got to be mad, because you're normal. So they're saying something completely different. They must be mad. It's that's the definition. But what is happening now?
Let me say, David, hold. Yeah, let me say one thing about what you just made so clear. Normal, the download of normal, is really the imposition of limits, barriers, and parameters that we are supposed to stay in to be, quote, successful in life.
Exactly.
That's normal, correct?
That's normal. I mean, I tell you, there was a little news story on the BBC website the other day. We've just had a little holiday. We call them bank holidays in this country. Where it's a period of about 3 days. And it said that shopping was down 4% over the bank holiday, and it was kind of a bad thing because it's bad for the economy. And you know, the point I made on that was, so fewer people buying things they overwhelmingly don't need with money they overwhelmingly don't have is bad. That's good. But you see, what has happened is everything's inverted. Everything's upside down. But the upside down is how things normally are. Thus, that is normal. I mean, what is normal? You were born in the outback of Australia. Your normal is never seeing anybody and never seeing a car. You are born in downtown LA. Your normal is never not seeing people and never not seeing vehicles passing. And it's just the normal that you experience. Now, what the system does, what the program does, is it gives you a version of normal, which is how society is run on that basis. And so your normal is that myopic vision of possibility. Mm-hmm. And that's what where people live in their heads from cradle to grave. And this is so important. This is the absolute fundamental of how the few control the many. You can't do it physically to billions of people. You have to control their perceptions, because their perceptions of self, reality, and the world and world events leads to what they'll support, what they won't support, what they'll challenge, what they won't challenge. It leads to everything. Who they condemn, who they blame, who they don't blame, it all comes from perception. And what we're looking at, this, the whole bottom line of this conspiracy, it's a perception deception. It's a manipulation of perception. And so the revolution is not stockpiling weapons and fighting the bad guys. It's actually a revolution of perception, because from that revolution of perception comes a revolution of action, and therefore a revolution of change.
Perception management, it's all about perception control. And once that is shaken or cracked, and the paradigm begins to weaken, people begin to push against those cracks and they want to move out. It's not normal for them to be held cradle to grave in such a constricted state. I completely agree. This is, and what you've just spelled out in the last 10 minutes is really the key to virtually everything and the liberation of our planet, our people, our species. We have been so engineered into perception prison. It's not funny. We got five corporations now here in the U.S. running 95 to 98% of the media. It's no contest. It's no contest. Cell phones, smartphones, we could go down the list. It's no contest. They own these poor people. I'm wondering if many of them really are, I don't want to use the word salvageable, if any of them can be retooled given the liberation of the kind of messages you bring. I think in some cases these people are so beholden and so afraid to step out of their reality and their programming and their download that they can't do it. They're not the ones that you need to spend your time with. The ones that you talk to, they get it, and they come to you seeking that license to go into areas they're not supposed to go.
Yeah, well, I'm coming to America in a few days to talk in New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco, and I'll be very, very interested to look at what is happening there, while being there.
Oh, yeah.
And in terms of the, what's going on in the election, because, we've reached a point a natural kind of point, really, in the way that not just American politics, but that's an outstanding example, but where politics was going to end up. We've ended up here with two candidates that the vast majority of Americans would rather not be voting for. It's just the way that this whole perception of running countries and running societies, the way that the people have taken that download, that you have to have this hierarchical structure with someone at the top that we have now, we're sold all over the world, because when you look at politics, the way that people see it and take it seriously is extraordinary, given decades and decades of experience. We have a situation in every country, and it's so easy to stitch up. We have a situation in every country where basically two parties, sometimes three, mostly two, can form a government. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is you vote for party A and you don't like what they do when they get into government, so you want to get rid of them. So what do? You vote for party B. You see them in power. You don't like what they've done in government, so how do you get rid of them? You have to vote for party A again. Do you know something? I spoke in Ukraine in 2011.
Wow.
And the president of Ukraine at that time was the guy they threw out in the Orange Revolution in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Because what had happened is they threw him out with a Soros manipulated coup, and then they put this other guy in to replace him, and they didn't like what he did. And so when they came to change the government, the only way they could change the government was vote for the other party, which was still headed by the guy they threw out. So he was voted back in. You couldn't make it up. But this is what we've got a situation now where, once again, you've got two candidates, and whichever one gets in, the same things will happen, despite the rhetoric of Trump. And of course, you've got Hillary Clinton, who is I would call her evil, except that evil would sue for defamation of character.
Well said.
And then you've got this other guy who will say anything in the moment and then say something else in another moment.
You know, that brings up one issue, and that's no matter what country you go in, and you've been to so many of them, all politicians, professional politicians, are essentially interchangeable. Trump, at least, is not a professional, polished politician. He's a little different. He's got a little different texture. You go to Ukraine, Viktor Yushchenko was the former president, politician, third president of Ukraine. He was dumped in February 2010, I guess, or something like that, after this country spent $5 billion on this coup to get rid of it. And we do that all the time. Not the average American, but the cabal that runs this joint. You were over there. You saw it. Those poor people have paid the price. The west of Ukraine now is just in tatters. The east, Donbass, very brave people over there. It's interesting to watch. Go ahead.
But you know what we have is this. Classic corporate politics where they have to sell a candidate a certain way, not least because there's no difference between them in all the fundamentals, thus they have to invent them. So we had Obama. He was the first black president. Well, that went well for black people, didn't it?
Great.
Because he wasn't the first black president in that sense. What he was the first black front man in the White House for the
That's
cabal
right.
that used white men up to that point.
Yep.
And now we're being sold this ludicrous idea that Hillary Clinton being president, the first woman president, will be good for women. No, it won't. I mean,
unbelievable.
Who's her bosom buddies? The Saudi royal family. They really support women's rights, don't they? And so we're now being sold this idea that women must support Clinton because she's the first woman. She's not. We're first woman president. Not in that sense. She's the first woman puppet in the White House, replacing the first black puppet controlled by the same network that has used white men up to that point.
Correct.
And it's people get caught in these sales pitches when if you just took a deep breath and took a step back, they'd see it was all a farce and all a circus, which is what it is every time.
The soap opera. She has no credentials in terms of being a women's rights activist.
No.
And protector. Look what she did with Bill Clinton's victims. Come on. I mean, look, the Clintons in and of themselves are so despicable, I didn't want to spend time on them. But she's actually been involved with paying these women off to keep them quiet because of her alleged husband, such as he is not, and his sexual attacks on them. And this goes on and on. She's Margaret Sanger. She praises Margaret Sanger, the eugenicist. Come on.
Yeah.
None of this stuff adds up. And then you look at her standing up talking about women's rights and all, we need a one. Give me a break. It's so schizoid, it's off the charts.
Yeah, when you look at the American political scene, particularly since the 1980s, I mean, it's kind of breathtaking when you look at it. Because, first of all, what most people won't realize, because the mainstream media won't tell them, is that the Clintons and the Bushes are extremely close bosom buddies. They were running drugs through the MENA airstrip in Arkansas when Clinton was Bill Clinton was governor. That was in my books in the mid 1990s. You know,
I remember
tracking the Clintons a long time. I mean, crikey! Yeah. I mean, they've not just got skeletons in the cupboard; they've got whole cemeteries. These people, and what. What we are looking at, therefore, is this idea that America is free because anyone can become president. Well, let's go back to 1980. It was Reagan Bush, which in fact was Bush Reagan in terms of the power in the White House.
Indeed.
And so Father Bush had two terms as a de facto president. He then had one term as the official president. He's then replaced by two terms of Clinton, who is replaced by two terms of Boy Bush, who is replaced by Obama, who now could be replaced very likely by another Clinton. I mean, there are more than 300 million people in America. How can that be unless it is absolutely contrived? And if it's contrived, who's contriving it? These are the questions that people need to ask. And when you ask them, the answers are very different to the world that people think they live in.
Yeah. It's all about asking the right questions. People just don't ask. They react, and they do. I remember when you used to, your message of your classic message of problem, reaction, solution is so rudimentary to understanding organized societal life on this planet. It's how the game is played. And all these clubs, all these so-called religions, political parties, it doesn't matter. They're simply control mechanisms to enable the download to be completed. And at whatever color paint the download is, it doesn't matter. It's still a download of barriers, parameters, and limits. And you're not supposed to go out. You're supposed to stay inside.
Yeah, that's why the real revolution is stepping outside of those parameters and living your life outside of that, speaking your truth outside of that, doing what you feel is right outside of that, rather than being cowed into just following the normal out of fear of the consequences of not following the normal. I mean, it starts with parents. I mean, our parents set parameters that are of great limitation on children in terms of what they can think, what they can do, what they can say. It starts right at the earliest time in people's lives and goes all the way through. And what I'm finding, Jeff, is this is a phenomenon that I'm finding in more and more people. So something is happening. It's people who have reached the point where they've been through this system. They've followed the carrot. I must be someone. I must do this. I must achieve this.
Oh, false gods. Absolutely.
Gotta. And they've kind of reached that point where they were aiming for. They might be the CEO. They might have made a few bob. And they're at this point, maybe in their 50s, actually some even earlier, and they're saying, what was it all about? Okay,
yes.
I've strived all my life. You know, yeah. What was it that John Lennon said, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. And suddenly they're there, but they don't feel any different. And it's like, you know, it's been a hoax. Well, that's exactly what it is. It's a hoax. It's putting that carrot just in front of you. This is what you need to do. This is what life is about. It's about striving. It's about achievement. It's about being someone. It's about being seen as being someone. It's about fame. It's about money. It's about power. All these things. And you follow the carrot, and then eventually you get there. Well, most people don't get there because the system won't let them. But some people get there, and when they get there, they don't feel any different. And all their life has passed, and they don't really want to admit to themselves, first of all, that it has been a hoax, because they don't want to admit they've been hoaxed, and their life has been chasing a dream that turned out to be not a dream at all. But there's more and more people that I'm coming across, and like I say, the numbers are so common now that there is something happening. People are having this reassessment. What is life about? And once you, again, you said a few minutes ago, it's about asking the right questions. That's exactly what it is. And when you start asking those questions, yes, what is it all about? Why do we do this? Then the system starts to crumble in your perception of it, because the answers are, we do it for no good reason other than
we're told
this allows the few to control the many. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good to hear you say this. You travel, you have contact with people face to face. I don't. I live in a little thimble. And to hear you say that people are getting it. And I'm also hearing you say that they're getting it in a very broad brushed common sense way that will give them a new, let's just call it a new beginning, a new bedrock, a new, they're formulating a new bedrock from which that they can operate for the rest of their lives and look at things and see. I think people, from what I'm gathering, are seeing through the lie. And if ever in this country, people trust the mainstream media again, shame, shame on them. It has been exposed, you and I know it, and most of our listeners tonight know it, as the biggest hoax, fraud, control mechanism, dirty, down and dirty control mechanism that you could ever see. And they are liars, they are whores, they're prostitutes, they're the worst. And you know why I walked away from television news after 12 years. I could see where it was going. Mass mind control. Disgusting. And so I started this program because the human mind is still somewhat, it does enjoy sanctity, and that's what I wanted to go after. Same with you.
Well, the thing about perception, where does perception come from? It comes from, yes, experience, which gives you a perception through experience. But and experience is a form of information, if you break it down. And the rest of perception comes from information that we call information, which is from the media. It's from the laughingly, bravely, ludicrously called education system. Yeah. And so your perceptions are formed by the information you receive. And so if you are seeking to program perceptions, then you have to control information that people receive, because that's the only way you're going to do it. And what the alternative media has done, and of course, people talk about the alternative media as if it's one thing. It's not. It's a vast, vast spectrum from, on one side, imperceptibly different from almost from the mainstream, across to those that are questioning every facet of, of belief and normal. But the alternative media has, in within that spectrum, offered people another information source, another way of looking at the world and world events. And the mainstream postage stamp normal version is so ludicrous, so limited, so just without credibility that it cannot stand the challenge of an alternative view. This is why mystics and seers and mavericks and of various kinds throughout human history have always been seen as dangerous by those in authority at the time. Why? Because they're offering another way of looking at everything that is different from what the authorities are trying to sell, whether it's religion, in the past or whatever. It's another way of looking at things. And that is the most dangerous thing that can possibly happen to that which is seeking to impose and program a perception, alternative ways of looking at things. Right. But what I'm finding very encouraging is, you know, well, of course, the mass ridicule and all this stuff 26 years ago, 25 years ago, it was clear there weren't many who were open to looking at the world in a different way. But that has changed. That has changed dramatically. And the kind of people that, I mean, the moment, you know, I'm going into cafes for a cup of tea to read my paper, but I don't read my paper because people are coming up to me all the time wanting to talk to me about this information. Mm-hmm. And they're all across the spectrum of society. That there is something happening. And I think that, you know, 3 years from now, we are going to be in a very different place in terms of the numbers of people who are saying, hold on a minute, this is making sense. What's going on? And this is the other thing. This is a very important aspect of this. I said many, many years ago that there's going to come a point where that which has manipulated from the hidden will have to appear in the scene. Because if you're going to transform human society in a certain way, there comes a point where it has to become obvious that that's what's going on. Not necessarily that there is a hidden hand behind it, but the fact that society is changing very demonstrably, and to the point where people are going, hold on a minute, what's going on here? This manifests, of course, in the increasing concern about the level of surveillance and what have you. And we're at that point now where the hidden is actually having to appear in the scene in changes in society. And that is making more and more people question what's going on. I mean, the idea that, I mean, when you look at the amount of money that's spent on surveillance and all that side of it, and destruction of privacy, and then you look at the number of people who are affected by terrorism in the West in terms of numbers,
right,
and compare that with the number of people that die in road accidents, number of people that
45,000 a year, David. 45,000 a year die in the U.S. on the roads.
Yeah, and so it's not about protecting life, this terrorism spending. Of course, it's not this mass surveillance and control system. It's about building a control system that will prevent rebellion by the masses, if you like, against the less than 1%.
Is it not an admission that the mainstream media can't do the job anymore, and they've got to have surveillance to back it?
Yeah, well, clearly they can't. But see, what I'm saying in the books and in this world tour is that where we're heading, and what we've been heading all along, is what I call the Hunger Games society. If people can see a pyramid, and at the top of the pyramid is the less than 1%, the bottom of the pyramid is basically the rest of humanity, and in the middle is this fierce, merciless police state, military police state control system to hold that quo so it doesn't move. And what's happening is this police state structure is being put into place under the guise of protecting people from terrorism because they know that because more and more it's becoming obvious and will become more and more obvious that this structure is being put into place, that there's going to come a point where a significant number of the target population are going to see what's happening. And they want this structure in place, this police state structure, to stop that rebellion when it comes along. That's why we're seeing what we're seeing. We're seeing the less than 1% sucking up the wealth of the world. We're seeing more and more people falling into that poverty.
Absolutely, they're being cut.
And then we're seeing the police state being put into place to hold that structure.
Yep. Exactly. We have a two-tiered lower class here now forming. The lower end of it, and then the upper tier of the lower class. Not much middle class left. They'll always have a semblance of one just to give the illusion, and then you've got the elite at the top. I want to ask a question about technology and Orwell. Orwell was on the inside, and most people know that now. He, I wonder, could or could not have imagined, what's your best guess, the technology and the technological explosion that has occurred here in the latter part of the last century and now dominates. The technology is so advanced, so merciless, so ruthless, that it's really beyond the ability of most people to grasp. And they don't want to hear it. And they're hiding it from us, of course. That's the game. Nothing surprising there. But it's really amazing. I just wonder what Orwell would say.
Well, what I do in these in the talks on this current world tour, there's a section in it where I go into this in detail because it's fundamental to looking at the world as it is now and what's unfolding. I'll just give you an example of how it's one of the things I've been saying all these years. This plan for the world is projected long into what we call the future. And it's unfolding. I mean, I go into some really deep levels of reality and how it works. But if you look at Orwell, he talked about the telescreens. Well, these are the smart TVs, and the smart TVs we have now are only Mark 1 or Mark 2. I mean, the surveillance that they give, you know, filming you and recording you in your own front room. But there was and then you look at Aldous Huxley, who was talking about the drugs and the genetics, which is all unfolding were tapping into, for whatever reason, into this projected plan for the future. And about 20 years after Orwell's 1984, in 1969, there was a guy called Dr. Richard Day. He was a Rockefeller insider. He was an executive of Planned Parenthood. And in 1969, he was addressing pediatricians in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and just told them, for whatever reason, what he was doing, but he told them to not take notes and not record, because he was going to tell them how the world was going to change, because basically what he represented was going to change it, was changing it. And Dr. Dunnigan did take notes and did some interviews before he died about what Richard Day said that day. It's extraordinary.
It is amazing.
What he said in detail. Yeah. The reason I mention that is because he indicated in what he said was coming, and the way he described what was coming technologically, he described the World Wide Web. He certainly described smart TVs, and the World Wide Web was supposed to be invented around the 1989, something like that, and he talked about it in 1969, and of course, fundamental to this whole technological AI takeover. And I could talk at great length about it and what's happening in front of our eyes if we only could see it. It's fundamental to this whole takeover. And of course, the organization that claims credit for the emergence of the internet is DARPA, one of the most, if not the most sinister organization on Earth, Pentagon's technological development arm, which in league with Google, is
pretty damn satanic,
driving this transhumanist agenda, which is not transhumanist, it's posthumanist,
because
they want the end of humanity as we know it.
Absolutely, this is not a joke. David, hold on, we have to break for a few minutes here. Get yourself a sip of tea or something, we'll come right back. For you who didn't maybe catch that, it's Dr. Richard Day, and a fellow named Dunnigan had a meeting with Day, and after Day passed on, I guess, or maybe before, he wrote down and then actually recorded his memories of what Dr. Richard Day had to say. This is an extraordinary story, and you're the only person I've heard even mention Dr. Day for 15, 20 years.
What I do in these all day presentations is I go through what's happening in the world, and then I throw in quotes from him from 1969. It's devastating.
Oh yeah,
because he was describing it in detail what's happening now. How does he know that? Because this plan from the shadows is not made up in 5 minutes. It's been unfolding for a long time.
Indeed. All right, hold on. We'll be right back with hour two with David Icke right after this.